Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we are going to do a podcast. The name of this podcast is going to be, Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes around AI and imagery? And I think this is going to be a very fun one, Rochelle, especially as like AI continues to make news and we just see these things that the first thing I think about when I think about AI and imagery is Puffer Pope, which was a picture of the Pope wearing like a Gucci vest or something. Like, it was very simple, but it just looked like, oh, there's a stylish Pope. And I didn't know that was an AI image the first few times I saw it. I was just like, hey, look at that funny image. Like, the Pope has a lot of money. I'm sure he like dresses nicely sometimes. That's neat. And then a couple weeks later, listening to a podcast, and they were like, oh, by the way, that Puffer Pope was imaginary. That was AI. And sure enough, like, you zoom in on him, he doesn't have fingers. He's holding a coffee cup, like, in a way that is completely unnatural. Like, you zoom in and you see all these things that are not real at all. But, you know, just in passing, it definitely looks like the Pope is wearing a fancy jacket. So I'm excited to talk about where else we see these things. Like, especially around AI, like, we think entertainment, like, it's all over entertainment, especially right now. And that's one of the, you know, we've talked about the writer's strike, but Hollywood is trying to get the AI to pretty much just replace the writers because it can generate all of this, I'll call it like low quality content, but low quality content is still valuable to Hollywood because, you know, not every script is going to be a banger. You know, it just needs to make a little bit of money and the studios will invest in it, and then people don't get paid.
Right. But you know, we see so much imagery. You know, I can think back, you know, going back, I can't tell you how long. So do you remember the movie, The Ten Commandments?
Yes. Yes.
So this movie is probably your parents' movie. I know it's been around for a long, long time. Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Will Brenner. Some pretty powerful actors. What's really amazing about this movie is there's one scene in it that is still to this day being talked about, and that's the parting of the Red Sea, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the movie, Charlton Heston spreads out his arm with the staff and he parts the Red Sea so the Israelites can go through because they're being pursued by the Egyptians, right? So they can go through. They've been in bondage for years and they want to go to the other side, to the promised land that God has promised them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he spreads his arms and the sea parts, right? And, you know, God only knows how many of them there are, but they get through. A good number of them get through. And the Egyptians are in hot pursuit. They're right hot pursuit. And scholars to this day are debating whether that could have happened. Could it have been possible that the Red Sea would have parted so that many of Israel, donkeys and horses and cattle and people could have gotten through? Is that possible? What type of technology parted the Red Sea for that movie? How was that possible?
So that's a great question. I don't know the specific answer there, but what I have a feeling is that they used the like double exposure back then. So that's where they would make a... they use something to part the sea, which is probably like, I'm gonna make a lot of guesses here, but they removed all the people. They made like a little tiny replica of what the sea would be. So, you know, pretty much like a fishbowl with water in it. And then you can like blow air or do something to part that water out of the way on like a very, very, very small scale. And then once you have a film of that, then you take the actors and put them in something totally different. And then just put the two pieces of film on top of each other. And it looks like, you know, they're walking through the parted sea when in reality, it was just, you know, a super small model of the sea that got parted. And they could probably still like add coloring and add some things to make it look more realistic. Even back in the, I don't remember if this was in the 60s or the 70s, but even then they could do something like that. And that makes it pretty much like a practical effect, right? They didn't use, they might use a little bit of extra coloring or a little bit of different color lighting to do some things, but it's still all something that they actually made, just not to the scale that you see it on the screen. And it reminds me a bit of like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where you have people of all these different sizes in there. Like you've got, I don't know, what are they called, like dwarves and giants and hobbits and like adult sized people playing sizes that are not true. And what they did there was they just used forced perspective. So if a tall, what is it? You put a taller actor up close and the shorter one further away, and then it looks like the shorter actor is even shorter than they are, and you're not using like any sort of actual effects. It's just the practicality of something being further away than someone else. I think my favorite of those effects is there's an old movie called Night of the Hunter, which it was remade into Cape Fear in the 90s, and there's this like bizarre scene. Night of the Hunter was made in probably the 40s or 50s, but you see a cowboy off in the distance on a horse, like singing. But you're looking at the cowboy through his victim's window, and it looks so bizarre. It's like a really chilling effect. And how they did that was they used a miniature horse, so like a pony, and a little person actor on top of the pony. And it was like the reverse of for it was still forced perspective, but like you're si you think something is bigger than it actually is, and then it just comes out looking like really bizarre. And I think it works really well in sort of creepy movies like that.
That's very interesting. So let me bring you closer to the 21st century, not exactly, but closer. Okay, so another one of my favorite movies is Dune, right? The original Dune, not the recent one. I'm gonna pretend they didn't even make that one. The original Dune. So in the original Dune, I could go through this whole movie, but in the original Dune, there are these worms, right? And there's these thumpers, and they put them in the ground and they thump and they make these worms come up out of the ground. I'm assuming they come out of the ground. I don't know where they reside, but they come out of the ground. And so all of these worms come out of the ground because the Zach Hatterack or whatever his name is drinks the water of life, and all of these worms come out of the ground. And so what's really interesting in that scene is these worms come together and they're these huge creatures. I mean, supposedly they're 3 or 4 football fields long and they come out of the ground. So again, are my eyes lying to me again? Are these things real? And is that entire scene real? So, and I want you to explain the green screen to us. But I want you to explain to me, how do they make scenes like that? Or are my eyes deceiving me? Is that really real? Or am I seeing things that are not there? And then I want you to extrapolate that to my ultimate favorite movie, Star Trek. And specifically, my favorite Star Trek movie is Into Darkness. So I want you to tell me, how do they make these things happen? So from that scene in Dune, and there are tons of Dune scenes in that original Dune that we could talk about. There are plenty of them. So when they blow a hole into the I don't know what it is, the colony or something, and they're able to suck the bad guy out into the mouth of the worm. All of these scenes are just absolutely phenomenal. How is it possible, Drew?
So I believe the Dune bits were stop motion, which is again like they look really big on screen, but in reality they've made it almost looks like a playset of the desert. It'll be a tiny playset of the desert with these little they're handmade worms. Obviously they're not as big as they are, they're not 3 football fields long. They're probably 2 or 3 feet high. And they filmed that by what they call stop motion, which is very similar to claymation, where you move those creatures like one frame at a time. Like, and we're talking like several frames per second. So if a thing comes up out of the sand, you're burying it, you pull it up just a little bit, picture, pull it up a little bit more, picture, pull it up a little bit more, picture. And then you have, when you pull all that together, it looks like this actual creature is moving and coming together, to eat somebody. And then they do the thing where they just superimpose the actors over top of that. I'm not 100% sure they had green screens at the time of Dune, but if they did, the green screen or whatever technology they were using would remove the actual, like, the real background of where the actors were, so that that could be replaced with a blown up version of the stop motion piece. There is a, it's similar to not Star Trek, but Star Wars. Like all of those, remember in Star Wars, all of those like AT-ATs and AT-STs, these just like giant hulking machines that move, like they look incredibly realistic, especially, when you first see the movie. It's like, wow, did they make this like elephant-sized tank that moves around? Because it certainly looks like it, but in reality, it's all just models. And they're, in some cases they use puppetry to move them around. In some cases they use robotics to move them around. Even thinking about one of my favorite old school or older school horror movies is Gremlins. So Gremlins has the little Mogwai with the eyes and the he's furry and he has these big ears and he just looks so cute. And it's sort of crazy how they like made this creature. And then like when you see the behind the scenes stuff, the when you see his eyes move around and his ears wiggle and all of that, it's all just robotics. And it's not in a creature that's, the size of a cat like it appears to be on screen. It's on a creature that's, the size of a couch. Like those things are huge. And if you look behind them, they have so many like mechanical wires coming out, like transistors and no, like all this stuff just shoved up in there that they have to like just barely hide so that it doesn't show up on screen. And, what in reality is a robot or, a really stupid robot with a little bit of fuzz plastered on his face looks like a living sentient creature, and that's sort of like Hollywood magic.
Yeah. So go with me to Star Trek Into Darkness. So there are three parts. So the very beginning of Star Trek Into Darkness, they are exploring somewhere on in the world, and they manage to somehow be seen by this alternate planet, if you will, and somehow know they have to get out of there, right? So somehow know they get out. They don't do too much damage because they're seen by this group of people, but they don't. But somehow another, this bad guy and his people, and they're living in these tubes, for lack of a better word, and there are some alternate intelligence, some superior intelligence, and the intelligence, and they live in these tubes, right? And so one of them has managed to be awoken and he wants to save his people, these tubes of people. What's really interesting about that is the scene where Kirk and Spock need this smart creature to go onto this other Star Trek Enterprise or whatever they call them to destroy this bad captain who wants to unite a war, right? How is it that they're able to space travel through these little spacesuits and jettison through these little things into this new Star Trek? I don't know what else. I don't think it's called Star Trek, but whatever you call that little airplane that the bad guy's on. I don't forgot what they call it. You know what
The
I'm
transporter or the
talking about? No, what's the name of his airplane? What's the name of it?
The Enterprise.
Is it called Enterprise? I don't remember what it was called, but
I
what
think
so
so.
Kirk and those guys were on one Enterprise, and I don't know what his was called, but whatever it was, but they need to get on there and destroy him, right? So when they shoot out from the Enterprise onto his airplane, that little bit of time that they are traveling from their enterprise to his enterprise. How is that possible without them losing consciousness to be in an open space, if you will, for that length of time it takes for them to get from their enterprise to his enterprise? What method, that's my lying eyes, seeing him fly, if you will, from their enterprise to his enterprise. So how are they able to do that? And now you see it all the time in movies that people are able to fly from one spacecraft to the other.
That scene is awesome, by the way. I know what you're talking about. Like they get like I think in the film, like they're wearing spacesuits. So in the theoretically in the world of Star Trek, if you have a spacesuit on, I guess you're cool. But it like yeah, they get like sucked out of one spaceship and they're like dodging asteroids and stuff until they get to the other spaceship and like that dude has to open the door like right before they come in. That scene gives me tingles just thinking about it. It was an amazing scene. And I have a feeling that was, I mean, not 100% CGI, but probably 99% CGI. And when they do something like that, I haven't seen behind the scenes for this specific scene, but how I imagine it is they have the actors on a in a green screen. They're wearing these like spandex suits. They're not wearing real spacesuits, obviously, or probably even suits that look like spacesuits. They're just going to be spandex with little sensors where the actor's joints are and when where movements come into play. And they probably lift the actor up in the air a little bit so that he's actually, horizontal or vertical, how whatever position they want him in. And they film it like that. And then afterwards, they've got a close up on the actor's face so they can get all of that stuff in. And then they just add everything else. Like they replace that green background with space, with, whatever they want that background to be. Darkness with stars. In this case, darkness, stars, little pieces of asteroid that are coming forwards and backwards, and even, in front of the actual actors, not just behind them. And then they put like the actor's spacesuit on digitally as well. Like all those little balls, all those little motion capture nodes that the person is wearing, like those all line up to, where clothing creases or, something that they need to know, something that they know is going to be moving and needs to be very precise. They can just dump that right on top. And now instead of, an actor hanging by cables in front of a green screen, you see an actor flying through space with meteoroids, whizzing right by them. It's sort of a miracle, but it's very neat.
Again, are you going to believe your lying eyes or what they say on TV? I mean, I will just say, Drew, there is so much to this. And I mean, like, we talked about this a while ago, like a lot of the technology that movies has had has eventually made its way to real life. I mean, a lot of it. And so it's just a matter of time before astronauts will start flying through the air, minus the spaceship or the spacecraft. Eventually this will all come to fruition. So that leads me to my next question about AI. So we have talked a lot about this topic a lot, and I think that a lot of this we will talk about this more and will be more in depth. And I know this is one of your favorite topics since we love the movies. You love going to the movies. But I have a question. Can we expect to see AI in other places other than the movies? So is it possible that we could see AI generated images and things in other places? So can I expect to see my grocery checkout person to be an AI generated thing? So
Oh,
could it
yeah.
be a robot? Could I expect to see my help desk person as an AI? So where could this go, Drew? Where do you see this going?
So AI can go in a bunch of spots. Like we've talked about like movies a lot, but it's also like getting into music as well. And like there was a song, it was a fake collaboration between Drake and The Weeknd that got released maybe 6 months ago or so. And it was just this really weird thing where it sounded, I mean, pretty much just like Drake and The Weeknd, but it was completely AI generated. Like neither of those vocalists had anything to do with the production of it. So like I feel like that was probably the crack in the facade of like AI not taking over music is it will soon be all over music, if not already there. I think help desks are, I don't know, I haven't heard of any help desks specifically that are using AI, but I mean, that's right around the corner. I think that's what many companies are trying to put out right now, because unfortunately, like that means less people that they have to hire and keep employed, is if you just have this robot that can behave like someone that was hired. Companies are going to use that, unfortunately. And same thing, like we think about now, if you go to McDonald's, there's all those like self-checkout kiosks. I mean, that's a step away from an AI attendant right there. Same with Walmart or grocery stores. I mean, it's getting, yeah.
Self-checkouts.
And I wouldn't be surprised if like self-checkout, especially in those bigger companies like Walmart, they likely are already using some sort of AI to tell if you are trying to cheat the cash registers and, put something in your bag that you haven't run up or,
In concert with cameras, right? So they got the cameras overhead. They got the cameras right there where you're checking out so they can see. Like if you put in, like it says, you have produce and you put in the wrong code. So like you put in the code for bananas and you've actually got plums, which cost more. They can see it. They have the security in the back who can see, I mean, I think there's a lot coming with this. The question is, how soon is it coming, Drew? So I asked you about so help desk. So in other words, could they put like the thing about the food insecurity with the girl? I mean, could they put a AI generated robot at the help desk? So in other words, instead of having a person at the help desk, could they create an AI generated robot to be at the help desk? So you walk up and there's a robot there, and you tell it what your problem is. Maybe you have to key it in. So maybe the robot, there's a kiosk there, and you key it. Some robot rolls up from the back, and it may ask you, "May I help you?" And you say, "I'm having a problem with my password." And so it'll give you a like right now. If you type in on Google or something, so I'm having trouble. With my operating system, it'll give you a list of choices, right? So, I mean, like, how could this be any different? And then, if you have a list of topics and it doesn't have a solution, maybe then it'll bring a human. But, it'll go through a list of choices and maybe it never brings a human, right? Because it has the answers to your problem. My perfect example is I'm trying to get some new ADT yard signs. I can't tell you how many options it gave me before it gave me an option for a person. So why wouldn't AI do that through robotics or something like that? So where is a place that you could say that there will not be robotics or AI?
Ooh, I don't know that I know of any places where we won't have it. Like I want to say doctors, but doctors, they're definitely beginning to use AI, and a lot of the medical work with AI does sound like sort of positive. Like if they're looking at moles, like say you have a doctor that's been working for 10 years, how many moles has that doctor looked at? 100 or 1,000. And now compare that to a piece of AI that has looked at, millions or billions of moles. Like chances are that AI is probably going to do a better job than the doctor because it has access to, millions of times more data. So I can't say medical stuff is going to be human only.
Firefighters.
There we go. Fire. Although, I mean, think about moving. Like, we've got self-driving cars now, right? So we should have self-driving fire trucks. And I mean, I don't see why we couldn't have robots putting out the fires as well. Like, if you had, it would be hard to go into a. I don't know that they have robots that can go inside of a burning building right now. So that may be the sticking point. But just sort of
Presidents.
sometimes I would probably prefer an AI president, but
Me too. Because that person, like in War Games, my favorite movie of all times, it knows how to play tic-tac-toe, knows not to press the button. Not go to the nuclear option, you know, because it knows it's a no-win option, you know. So whatever's happening in Ukraine and China and all those other places, like there's no, this is a no-win option. Just because you got your pants in a bunch doesn't mean you should go to war.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, I think a lot of politicians don't really understand technology as well. Like it's, you know, whenever they have those, the big tech folks in, like the big tech folks are having to explain to them, you know, what the difference between an iPhone and Google is. Like it's not, politicians could definitely use some AI assistance, but yeah, it's really hard to say.
Drew, what do you know has been done in the AI world about money? So has AI learned about money? And to me, that's one of the places where I think it'll be interesting to understand where we are going with artificial intelligence, and that's money, right? Mm-hmm. So we're half joking about presidents, but like, until we have taught AI the entire concept of money, like, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why we would probably struggle with AI. And that, so blockchain is one thing, but I'm talking about the construct of money, right? Mm-hmm. So not that you just use it to pay bills, but how it creates inequity between groups, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the places where I think money will hold up AI. That's going to be the place where it is, because I think that if AI was taught humanity,
mm-hmm.
that we would probably eliminate all the inequities and all the societal woes that we have if AI understood it. Now, if we taught AI all the shortcomings we as humans have, we'd probably still have the same problems we have now.
Do you think that we could actually teach AI humanity in a way that like most people would agree with? Like that's sort of what I have a hard time visualizing is like, what's the algorithm that says this is good? Like, I don't think we as humans can even agree on that right now, unfortunately.
I agree with you. I think that the problem is that we as a society, we struggle with humanity at, you know, like we talk about this a lot when we talk about diversity, but we do not like each other as a whole. And that's not black and white. White people don't like each other, you know, so it's not just, you know, we don't like each other financially. We don't like each other by skin color. We don't like each other by things that are just so trivial that they just burn us out. So I agree with you. I don't know if we could teach AI that, because we as a people have not learned it, which means that, you know, the reason why there's bias and discrimination and racism in our society is because we want it to be there.
Yeah.
And we have to want to teach it out, and we don't. This is what DeSantis said. DeSantis said that Black people learned a trait during slavery. That's about the most outrageous shit I've heard, you know, in years.
Yes.
Not much, but in years. You know,
yes.
I mean, and people believe that. There were people who were saying, yep, they did. And, you know, you could take a teeny fraction of that and say, maybe. You know, you could say, okay, you know, you learn how to build houses, you learn how to build bridges, you know, half the shit that we built for white people while we were enslaved, we learned how to do that. You know, could you say that was a trade? Could you apply it when you left slavery? No, you could
right.
not. So
right.
It's sort of like what we talk
and
about.
And most people didn't have the opportunity to leave it.
Right. It's what we talk about. We talk about coding, right? So people all are up in arms about coding, right? We taught kids to code. It's only good if you help them learn that trait after you did the class. So if you teach them how to code, like you were talking about your kids, are they going to be able to use that skill after they leave the class? That's the important part about coding and all these things. It's being able to use that skill continuously. If you teach somebody something in a class, it's like what you taught us about Go. I can only speak for myself. I've not used Go since then, so it didn't help me very much. I have a concept of it. I know what it is if I heard it again. But if you don't get to use it over and over again, you didn't learn anything. You just
No,
learned something.
Absolutely same here. Like I can listen to someone talk about something all day, and until like I sit down and practice it myself, like it just doesn't sink in. Like it might as well be just like bouncing off of my skull.
And that's where it is for all people. And that's not a race or a gender or an age thing. It's just you need to practice what you learn. So if you teach me how to code in C++, that's great. Now, do I get to use it again? So are you going to say, come on, Russia, let's write a program in C++? That's when it applies, not just that you said it. So in our society, we must want to, you know, I asked somebody this yesterday. From the early 1800s, we knew of cancer. It is now 2023. Why haven't we cured cancer? Because we don't want to, because so much money in it. You know, people are putting millions of dollars in cancer. We send money to Jude and all these other places because there's so much money in the study of cancer. I mean, like childhood cancer, you know, cervical cancer, breast cancer, you know, prostate cancer, all these cancers have all been studied for years.
Yeah.
And you tell me we haven't cured any of them because we don't want to. And all of these things that exist in our society, because there's more, much more money in the practice of studying these things than it is homelessness, hunger, child hunger, you know. Why? And so yesterday there was something on the news in Wake County. They don't have enough bus drivers to take kids to school.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? Because in Wake County, as in Durham, as in Chapel Hill, Orange, the majority of children who go to these schools are Black and brown. White people have methods to get their children back and forth to school. So now, if your child does not get to school, guess who is going to come knocking on your door? The truant officer. Guess what? Your child's not going to get enough to eat. That creates a bunch of problems that exist there. And the system is not in tune to fix them.
Yeah.
It's just, the problems that exist in our society are problems that we do not wish to fix. You know, if your grandmother dies of cancer, you're going to be up in arms about it. But what you need to be up in arms about is, why is this not fixed? Why don't we have a cure about it? And it's because we don't want to cure these things, because there's so much money. The sports foundations, so like football, basketball, baseball, they have in 2021, they gave over $1 billion to cancer. That's just sports. That's not the rest of us. Yeah. Why is there a cure for cancer?
Yeah, $1 billion is an indescribable amount of money.
Money. Yeah. You know, that's just sports. That's just, you know, football. That's why haven't we got a cure for cancer?
Yeah.
It's just no answer for that. It's just depressing doing that. As I sit back and look, I told Skip this yesterday. You are a millennial. Is that what you are? You're a millennial?
No, I'm Gen X still.
You Gen X. Yeah. Okay. All of those millennial Gen X, I swear I don't understand anything that they do. They want everything right now. They're not paid enough. Everything is nothing. I ask Everett all the time, why are you all like this? You know, like, I don't understand anything about them. No. Everett comes into the house. It's about 2 o'clock. I'm gonna make a hamburger. You want one? No. What do we eat for dinner? I don't know. I'll think about it then. About 4 o'clock. I think I'm gonna get some Chinese food. Okay. What are we gonna eat for dinner? I don't know what to think about then. But you don't want nothing to eat then. So now we done asked twice about dinner. It's over. You know, and this is what we live with every single day, and we don't understand any of it. You know, it's just like that generation is just heads and above over us. You know, I don't understand anything about it. Like, it's not like clear communications. Like we don't understand any of it. And like our generation, we're gonna be left behind, but that's all right. In the next 30 years, we'll all be dead, so you don't have to worry about that. All the baby boomers will be dead in 30 years. So, but it's not clear. So you guys are gonna have to figure out how to make your society work for yourselves. For your children, for yourself, you're going to have to talk and say more, not say less, because that's what Everett's favorite word is, say less.
Thank you, everybody, for listening today. If you have any questions or feedback, please shoot us an email to imminentteachnology@gmail.com, and we would love to hear your feedback. Thank you.